Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today's episode is brought to you by Jonji. Jonji's trail tights and shorts have pockets and a moisture-wicking, body-hugging fit to support your longest adventures. Learn more at jonji.com. Today we're chatting with Christian Morgan, who set the southbound-supported Appalachian Trail record in just over 45 days. Join us to hear what it's like to be crewed by your mom, set an FKT in the wettest New England summer in recent memory, and still manage to keep your feet pristine. Thank you, Christian, so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Heather, it's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So today we're going to talk about your supported southbound Appalachian Trail FKT. But in 2022, you went northbound in, I believe, 44 days. So what prompted you to come back and do this southbound record?
I guess the hunger to set a record. I was pretty disappointed last year with myself because I kind of went out there to try to set an FKT on the Appalachian Trail. And I guess, you know, setting the second fastest time in the world and there not being a record of it anywhere, you know, I just felt, I just didn't feel fulfilled. And I thought, geez, well, I thought maybe if I head southbound and I fall off pace for the overall record, you know, as a second kind of second tier goal, I could actually, you know, have the fallback of the southbound fastest known time. So I guess I was still hungry to, you know, continue my journey towards setting a fastest known time on the Appalachian Trail. Yeah.
So you feel like this sated that hunger, or are you still going to be back to set a northbound record?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm 46 years old. Run coaching and endurance sports is my career. So it's like, it'd be pretty young age to kind of retire, you know? Yeah, I'm not ready to kind of throw in the towel just yet. Whether I come back to go for a northbound to try to, so I'd have the southbound and the northbound records on the AT. I've got a lot of experience now as well. So, you know, all those lessons and mistakes I feel I made over the, including this year, you know, could all be used, you know, towards the next attempt. But I mean, it's still early days. Do I want to do that? Am I hungry for that? Yes. And was I thinking about it when? I was actually thinking about that before I even got to Springer Mountain. Like, I was thinking, well, if I come back this next year, I'm going to change this or, so yeah, I'm still hungry for that.
Well, I look forward to seeing what happens. So speaking of that, like, what would you change? What were the differences between 2022 and 2023? And maybe where do you still see areas for improvements?
Well, I mean, this year was almost didn't happen because we had record-breaking flooding happening over the northern states. Unfortunately, even a hiker died during a river crossing, which was really unfortunate. My thoughts go out to his family. And also, we kind of, like I say, didn't almost start. So we all met up, the crew met up at Shaw's Hiker Hostel, which is, you know, south of the 100 Mile Wilderness. And we realized when we were there that, yeah, this is not the right time to start. So then we all, like Iceman went to, back down to Pennsylvania. Me and Gun Section went to New Hampshire and we postponed. And then we started again, did a 56 mile day, day one. And then I think a couple of hours into day two, I'd got my leg trapped in between two boulders on a river crossing that was chest deep. That should have actually just been a rock hop across. So we caught, like I called it. In fact, I said, listen, guys, like, you know, I didn't feel good doing this. So then finally there was a weather window and we took it. You know, we set off in the aftermath of these conditions. So we had some of the worst conditions on trail, actually. So I'd say that was different. But I mean, I had maybe the wrong weather, but the right mindset. So I think my mindset was different this year going into it.
So what was different with your gear and your logistics?
The logistics and the gear. So, like, yeah, like I, not much really. Again, like I said, mindset, I think. So that would definitely change the logistics. I just think it was the relentless forward motion approach. Like, it, no matter kind of what I encountered along the way, I just had an answer for it. And whether it was a mental obstacle within my mind or some physical obstacle on the trail, I just seemed to be able to persevere, push through that, and continue on. And as you know, Heather, yourself, like, doing the trails, like, there's always something gonna crop up. There's always a hurdle ahead, and you know, you have to find a way around it. And you do, and then once you do, then there's some other complication. So I think it was just my mental approach. Like, the crew would say to me when I entered a road crossing, wow, like, you're such a pleasure to, like, work with. Like, you're not in a bad mood. You're, you know, you're in and out efficiently. And yeah, you just seem to be enjoying yourself, you know, despite the conditions. So I guess it was just my mindset that was different.
What do you think it was that helped you cultivate that mindset?
For sure, experience, and coming back like year after year. So, like, I had two failed attempts in 2019 and 21. I made sure to lay down my 5 points of gratitude really early on. And every time I came to encounter something difficult, I just came back to those. And those were, so I had two crew members, Iceman and Gun Section, and one of those is my mother, Gun Section. So it was like, my 5 points of gratitude were my mother, Iceman, my body, the opportunity, and the experience. And, you know, first and foremost, my crew, obviously, who I shared the journey with. And then, like, I was meant to come over in 2020, and we had this pandemic with COVID. And so I couldn't come over. And so I think the opportunity was, you know, you don't always get the opportunity, you know, like, I'm just so amazed, really, at what the body can do. Often it's the mind that gives up and finds some kind of excuse. But as long as the body is willing, you know. So, yeah, my 5 points of gratitude were always at the forefront of my mind. And because they weren't to do with, oh, I want to be the best, or I want to achieve this, or, you know, it wasn't so much about me. It was about the people around me. And it just felt like, you know, that was a strong position to be when facing difficult moments.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of evidence that having an attitude of gratefulness is really beneficial in life in general. So I think that's really neat that you had those pillars of gratitude to buoy you up mentally on this FKT.
Yeah. I mean, it just came from nowhere. I just was running one day. I was like, right, my 5 points of gratitude are, and I don't know, it just seemed to be, I didn't have that last year. You know, I mean, I was grateful, but I didn't have these specific, you know, and I came back to these every time. So yeah, I agree. I mean, I actually heard, the podcast that you did with the guy whose name the guy who just set the PCT self-supported.
Nick Fowler.
Yeah, Nick Fowler. Like, Nick spoke about his points of gratitude. It really seems to be a common trait among people who set, you know, who persevere and set records.
So you mentioned your mother was part of your crew. Can you tell us a little bit more about your crew?
Yeah, Iceman is 72 years old and comes from Pennsylvania. So, like, that's Iceman. He's an American citizen. My mom, Gun Section, she gets her trail name from visiting Walmart a number of times, and they're pretty big stores. And, you know, sometimes I'd phone her up, and I think after the third or fourth time, she said, "I'm in the Gun Section." I said, okay, well, that's pretty cool trail name. So she's had that for about 4 years now. So it was a two-person crew, had a roof tent on top of the Toyota Tacoma, which Iceman drove. He's been part of this since 2021. So he helped set the second fastest time northbound last year, was part of a failed attempt in 21, and then was obviously together with us this year. Out of those 2,200 miles, I probably had about 200 miles of people joining me and running with me, but the other 2,000 miles were by myself. So,
wow.
Yeah, like a big part of it was alone, which I actually think that was, for me, the perfect balance to be able to just soak up the noises around me, like the wind, and just like entering into my mind and things. Whereas when I was with someone, it was a relief, you know, to have some company. But yeah, I like that time alone on the trail. So the guys would often see me at road crossings. Yeah, like Heather, just refresh my memory. I don't think you've done any like supported FKTs. I know you've done some ultra races, but have you done any supported FKTs?
Not an FKT, but I was heavily supported on my calendar year Triple Crown.
Okay, so you know how it works. It's like this shared experience, and it makes it quite special. So yeah, the difference between, I guess, a self-supported and a supported is the people. I mean, we just worked so well as a team, even better than last year, because you can understand probably with family, there may be some emotional things that get in the way, like the relationship right. of a mother and a son. Like, you know, mothers can be quite mothering and, you know, often give advice. And like, I think I kind of let go of my ego mostly last year and pretty much completely this year. And I was like, okay, you're gun section, you're on the crew, you're also my mom, but I'm not going to get triggered by things maybe I got triggered by as a teenager, you know, like, I'm not going to be a moody teenager out here. So we worked so well as a crew. I mean, the experience is just, again, like I said, one of my points of gratitude, the experience. So I have all these wonderful memories now with my mother and Iceman. And at the end, when I said goodbye to Iceman, the embrace and the crying and weeping from us both was just unexpected. I felt like I was saying goodbye to my best friend. So it was such a valuable experience. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't even try to imagine having my mother assisting me on an FKT. I feel like that would just be such an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. It's something I had to work out over the years. So in 2019, we came out, we had a failed attempt, and the dynamics were totally just different than they, like I said, I just completely let go of my ego this year and just did what I had to do to keep on moving forwards and set that southbound record.
Yeah. And you did.
Yeah.
You mentioned a car top tent. Is that where you slept most nights?
It was pretty cool. I really enjoyed the nights that I chucked a backpack on, had my tent, sleeping bag. Usually to make it easier, I had like a quarter pounder with cheese, and for dinner, you know, just cold. I had like a little espresso for in the morning, cold, obviously, in a plastic screw lid. And just set off as like a regular through hiker, I guess. You know, quite a few nights I camped out on the trail, no support, by myself, because the road crossings weren't conducive with the miles we wanted to do that day. It was either not enough or it was just too far, so kind of messing up our daily mileage. I just chucked the pack on and went in, and I believe in 2021 I had a failed attempt at the AT, but I do like to refer to failures in life as stepping stones towards success. And like what happened in 21 was I got in, I don't think I had the right mindset, and after 6 days I finished in hot springs. But what was really valuable to me that year was I actually went up to Hanover. I chucked on my my hiking pack, and I joined the through hikers to finish off the last 450 miles as a regular through hiker, except for obviously a section hiker, right? And yeah, it was just good to kind of experience, you know, hike at midnight, setting up my tent, chilling with a couple of beers, and just hanging out with the guys, having a campfire, really slowing things down, and just being part of that community and making friends, you know, really good friends who I still have today. All those guys know me as Down Over. One guy called Cave Bear gave me the trail name because he said, right, so you used to live in Australia and now you live in England, so how about Down Over? And I thought that was pretty cool. So I think that really helped with when I was running on the Appalachian Trail in previous attempts prior to 2021, like for example, 2019, I'd run past a bunch of through hikers and I'd look and I'd think, ah, oh, geez, I wonder what it's like to set up my tent and take it easy, you know, at, I don't know, 5 p.m. So then I had that experience and that helped me. And then sorry to go back to your question. So did I stay out on the trail? Yeah, just like a regular through hiker. I had that experience and I was able to use that in this year's attempt.
Can you walk us through what an average day would have looked like start to finish?
Sure. The alarm would go off at 4 a.m. I was surprised myself to be efficient. I'm going to give you the regular day starting from the roof tent. So to be efficient, I would have all my t-shirt, my shorts, my socks and my shoes in the tent with me at the bottom. Those roof tents are pretty big. They sleep too, so they're so spacious for one person. So everything I needed, including my pack with my snacks, and everything would be up there with me. My electronic devices, which were the tracker, my watch and the phone, everything would be charged up there with a power bank. So pretty much when I came down that ladder, I would be down within less than 10 minutes, fully dressed, my pack with my snacks in for that morning section, which would probably be anything up to, you know, depending as long as we weren't in the Smokies or certain sections of Maine where there are bigger sections. But like, you know, anything up to like 16 miles worth of snacks and so on. And then Iceman would have done a coffee the day before. I'd have a cold black Americano, which eventually he just started heating it up because it really didn't take long. So I'd have an Americano and then I'd go, you know, and sometimes that would be anything from like 15 minutes to 25 minutes, minutes past 4 a.m. So I was pretty efficient to get going. And then I guess you start off, like originally I wanted to start on the 1st of June, which would have given us the most amount of daylight hours for those 40 days because you have summer solstice on the 21st of June.
Right.
But because we got delayed so many times, you know, sunrise was like after 7 a.m. So three hours or two and a half hours of dark running and hiking and I'd have my head torch on and, you know, so you start the day looking forward to sunrise, which is really nice. And you get this, I don't know, it's a nice way to tick off 2 or 3 hours. And then eventually you can take your head torch off. And by then I've usually come in to see the crew at the first road crossing. And I actually, my watch alarm went off every 30 minutes. I forgot to mention as well, sorry, before the Americano, I had a blueberry and kind of oatmeal smoothie. You know, you can get those wild blueberries compared to the regular ones, and they're kind of meant to have twice the amount of antioxidants. So I would have like a blueberry smoothie with some oatmeal and probably maybe a few other ingredients, some nut butter to boost it up to 500 calories. I wouldn't eat for an hour. And then every 30 minutes for the rest of the day, for the rest of the 45 days, my watch would bleep and I ate 150 calories every 30 minutes. So I never had any energy dips and I never felt too full, bar one or two occasions. Then I'd see the crew. I'd come in. It would be great to see them. I'd drop off stuff I didn't need, like my head torch. I wouldn't start taking things in and out of my pack. I'd just take my pack off, give it to the crew, take a new pack fully loaded. And they'd say, it was usually every, you know, okay, you got a 10-mile stretch. So, yeah, I mean, I would do that, see the crew, repeat all the way up till the evening. And then the evening routine was, we found a little fold-away camping chair in just near the, what's it called? Just before you go into... Oh, there's a shop that you hit up in Maine just before you go up Katahdin. I'm trying to remember what the... It is the it's the northern end of the 100-mile wilderness, and you come out...
Oh, A-Ball Bridge?
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, Heather. Yeah, A-Ball Bridge. There's a couple of shelters there, and I found this old camping chair. So that became my crew chair.
Yeah, it was so comfortable, like low to the ground, you know what I mean? Lean back. And I'd come in, see the crew. First thing I'd do is like take care of my feet to be efficient. Some nights I was fed the hot meal, you know. Other nights I just fed myself and then we'd probably be a bit longer. So yeah, you were talking about maybe some of the things I could have changed. I definitely some nights just took a whole hour, you know, getting ready for bed, which is so over the top. Whereas other nights I took 30 minutes and that's, you know, I mean, you do 30 minutes compared to an hour a night, that's 20 hours or 20
right.
hours more than a day, you know, to shave off your time. So yeah, we were probably a bit relaxed and I enjoyed the time with the crew and it was just nice. So yeah, I'd have my meal, look after my feet. I actually managed a way to use my Theragun sideways to kind of create a vibration on my feet, which stops the irritability. I had like an irritable feeling last year where my feet just felt like they needed some foot reflexology, you know, to just massage them out. And this year I didn't get that. So that was really good. Then just get in bed, you know, set my alarm and I'd typically have 7 hours sleep, which again seems pretty indulgent. Wake up and do it all the next day. Yeah.
What were the staples of what you ate or things that you felt were indispensable, the thing, or maybe just the things that you'll never eat again? Talk about your food a little bit for us.
Yeah. I did have some supplements. My favorite ones were the currants from New Zealand, because it's like each little capsule contains the same amount of a handful of these like currants. And yeah, I really looked into the research and the, you know, berries and currants and these kind of summer fruits have got a lot of antioxidants in. So yeah, I actually had about a pound of blueberries a day along on top of a high dosage of those currants. So I had all this goodness going into my body. Then as well as you know, like sometimes McDonald's, but most of the time, my mid-morning breakfast sandwich was just like bacon, egg, and it was cut in half because, yeah, again, I didn't want to put in like 500 calories in one sitting, you know, at a road crossing. So that would usually be my second road crossing. I'd have bacon and egg either from McDonald's or my gun section would make that. And then, I was having organic chicken or beef every day. And then at the same time, you know, I was having some cereal bars. Also, what else was I having? Jeez, I had everything. There wasn't kind of, I mean, Cheetos, you know, like, I mean, actually a lot of like through hiking food, you know, a lot of these kind of snacks and just aimed, I mean, you know, Twixes, Snickers bars, but I think the health, so there's a combination of junk food and also health food. And the junk food was your regular chocolate bars, cereal bars, and these kind of chips and things. But then the healthy stuff, I made sure to get in, like I say, about a pound of wild blueberries, got in my current supplements. And I just thought that, you know, I did want to have some kind of like, and then the chicken, I considered the meat and the beef, and then avocado. Every other day I was having a bag of Rocket, because Rocket has got some really good properties in it as well. So I guess that was probably the benefit of having Gun Section, who's my mom on trail. She was pretty good at the food aspect. So Iceman didn't really do that stuff. It was more Gun Section. So, you know, Heather, yeah, I kind of had kind of everything. And then the evening meal would be a backpacker's pantry meal. You know, I don't know if you've tried them. It's like a camping.
I have.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then sometimes that would be fortified with a steak, you know, chopped up steak.
Right.
And then I would have like some Ben and Jerry's for dessert and some pie. And I mean, that was it. That was the template every day of what I had.
Yeah, I think that balance of, you know, junk food that's just calories and a really healthy set of micro and macronutrients to keep you healthy and performing optimally, it's a really good combination.
Yeah, and it kept it interesting as well, because I would have got sick of healthy food and I would have probably got sick of junk food. So that combo was great. I always had something that I wanted to eat when that watch alarm went off. I never felt like palate fatigue, you know?
Do you know approximately how many calories you eat per day?
Actually, there's a scientific study. I gave urine samples to the same guys who did the Arizona Trail study on Jim.
Oh, okay.
So I'm looking forward to that, those results to come out. But I mean, we kind of guessed that I was eating about, I know it's quite broad, but about 6,000 to 8,000 calories a day.
Yeah, I know when I interviewed Joe and Nick Fowler,
and they're talking about eating like 10,000 calories a day. And I just can't fathom that. So it's kind of interesting, the variety of how much people take in.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You mentioned taking care of your feet, like you had a ritual for that. And I know you posted on social media pictures of your feet, which look pristine after what you put them through. I mean, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what your foot care regimen was like.
Yeah, so foot care routine was pretty much similar to last year, but I didn't have the massage gun. And so I ended up with that kind of deep, achy feeling. But in terms of blisters, I didn't get any blisters this year or last year. The only problem I had this year with my feet was because we had the delayed start, I'd taken care of, what is it called? Like a pedicure. I gave myself, in other words, I cut my nails. I didn't have a pedicure, but I cut my nails, on my toes to make sure that, you know, like you don't want long toenails starting at FKT, cause yeah. So I cut them. And then as the 6 weeks passed by after we were meant to start, I didn't cut them again, and they didn't grow a great deal. You know, I didn't cut my toenails every 6 weeks. However, they were just a few millimeters long enough that the long toe on both feet next to the big toe must have had a little bit of nail protruding, which hit the inside of the front of the shoe. And I did lose both those toenails early on. So
okay,
I reckon that was the problem there. Besides that, my feet... really are pretty amazing. So to maintain the quality of my feet, I took a file with me, and every night where I had calluses naturally, I just kept on top of the depth, you know, the size of the callus, just to bring them down a little bit. And I did that every night I was with the crew, unless I was out camping by myself. I also did like an Epsom salt, like hot water soak, only for a few minutes, because I didn't want to spend too much time in it. And then I think one of the main things is not running with wet socks and shoes. So if I saw my crew and my socks and shoes were wet, unless I knew they were going to get wet straight away, I kind of took my socks and shoes off. Dried my feet and then used like baby powder. So I put it really dries your feet up pretty well. And then I did the opposite. If like further down south, there was hardly any water. In fact, there was almost like a drought. All the water sources were dry. So then instead of drying down my feet, I did the opposite. I used this, I think it's called Dr. Teal's kind of a cocoa butter. It's really nice. It smells nice. And gun section was scared if I camped out and I put that on my feet, the bears were gonna come and sniff me out. I was like, listen, you don't need to worry about bears. They're not interested. So yeah, I used the duck that I like the smell of the coconut. It's really nice. So yeah, moisturized them when they were dry, dried them out when they were wet, changed socks when I needed. I think I cut my toenails once during the attempt, filed down any calluses, and then massaged them. I mean, I spent like sometimes 20 minutes with the massage gun on either foot, and I didn't have that deep achy feeling that you get when you're lying down in bed ready to go to sleep. As for injuries, I had one injury. I had one injury that stopped me, but I did have another injury, which I healed along the way. But the one injury that stopped me, and we lost, you know, like whatever it was, 35 miles that day, was because I was running through so much mud in Vermont. I got an overuse injury on my kind of like, I kind of think it was to the side of, above my ankle to the outside of my legs, almost like anterior tibialis, but shin area, but not quite calf, so kind of on the side. And I had this like really acute, sharp pain. And I think it was from, I didn't practice running in mud for 16 hours. You know, I didn't do that. And I think I just got this overuse injury of a muscle that I don't normally use. So that took me off trail. And I just did a Scott Jurek. You know, remember when he went for his 21 southbound attempt and he had a day in the hotel and just kind of tried to see if his body would heal and came back out on trail the next day? Do you remember that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it works for me. I came back out on trail. The pain never went above 4 out of 10. Whereas the day before, I was on my hands and knees crawling, crying and apologizing to my body, saying, I'm so sorry, I'm going to take you to a motel. And yeah, I just made this deal. I was like, listen, I'm not going to be emotional about this, but I'm going to give you some rest. Came back out on the trail next day, and I think I just did a 50-something mile day and then hit mid-50s after that for a bit. So that was good. But the other injury I had was I fell. And I just had I went to the hospital and had an x-ray a couple of days ago and then saw a specialist. He said I tore my ACL, but I fell about 500 miles before the finish, hit my left knee on a rock, and I tore my ACL. But you know what? I don't know how I did it, Heather, but I just said to myself, it was like this natural instinct. Because every time I kicked like a rock with the inside of my foot, as if you would kick a football, I had a really sharp pain on the inside of my knee. So I was like, okay, Christian, track forwards, you know, track forwards. And I healed my ACL while I was running this last 500. I'm surprised. The doctor couldn't believe it. I mean, you know, it's like, are you serious? He goes, we would put a cast on your leg so you would track forwards. And you did that while running 500 miles. I mean, you know, it was pretty cool.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I was impressed myself.
I do think, you know, anecdotally, I mean, I've observed this myself and talking to other people like you who've done these long FKTs. I do think there's a certain level at which the body kind of becomes a super healer. Like it understands you're doing something and it has to heal up faster than normal. And in your case, injuries that don't normally heal.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I mean, last year I had a quad injury. Again, it's almost like, I don't know. I know Scott Jurek had one. He's the one who inspired me. And I thought, well, if he can, you know, finish through a quad injury and it can heal, I know a human being has done it. Otherwise, you wouldn't have probably heard anything about that. So I was inspired by Scott last year and I had a quad injury. And I hiked about 100 miles over 2 days, just hiking, no running. And it healed. And then I was able to run again. I was like, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting demonstration of what the body is capable of. In my PCT FKT in 2013, I pulled a hamstring. And I mean, I've done this many times in my life and it always takes weeks to heal. And I remember it was completely healed in 3 days. And I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy, but I'll take it.
Not just healed, but able to kill, you know, just do another killer day as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like carry on.
Yeah, there's something in that. I think we need to get these scientists on check, like, you know, go and investigate. I think it's to do with the blood flow or just, I know if I sat down after any kind of injury on trail and just sat down, I would be just hobbling around for weeks. But yeah, just putting out 50 mile days after injuries is, I don't know, it's the way it goes on trail.
There's some sort of balance between giving your body the right amount of rest or reduced intensity, but also letting it know that we need to heal because we're still using this and keep moving through it so that it heals well. And yeah, like you said, we need to investigate that.
Yeah, unless it's a broken finger. I broke my finger last year and I should have put it in I fell in just coming out of New Hampshire and hit a tree. And instead of my hand going on the tree with my palm, there was a branch sticking out of it. So I twisted and broke, fractured my right index finger. Yeah, and like the crew put it in, obviously I still had 280 miles to go through Maine, and I should have put it in they didn't put it
they sellotated or whatever to the finger next to it, but it was hard to get in and out of my pockets. And I was using my right hand probably more than my left, so it became frustrating. And I was just like, I'm gonna take the cast thing off. And yeah, so now my finger's kind of bent, but which that's a bit annoying, because as someone who kind of has no injuries and I have this kind of weird bent right index finger, but yeah, I don't know. So I think in terms of like fractures and things, that may be a different case, but muscular injuries for sure.
Yeah, the soft tissue.
Yeah, soft tissue, tendons, and these things.
So obviously you've done the AT now to completion twice. Were there any sections when you were out there that you were absolutely dreading doing again? Or maybe sections you were really looking forward to repeating?
Well, last year I went north, and as I got further north, one of the things that didn't allow me to set the... So for anyone who doesn't know what happened last year, I had a 27-mile lead on Carol Sabe right the way... It started to come down eventually, but right the way up to day 31, I had a lead, 75% of the trail. I was ahead of record pace by 10 miles on that 31st day. And what happened was pressure got to me. I just kept, Carol was inside my head all day that morning. And I just eventually stepped off trail, and because I just couldn't hack it, mentally. So then when I did step back on trail, I mean, I didn't quit. I finished the trail. But when I did get back on trail, I felt the pressure was gone. But I found Maine really tough. Like I was almost like tripping on everything because so slow. So then I think coming south this year was really good because I was so fresh going through Maine. So Maine was the place that I think I hurt the most last year. But yeah, I felt really good about it this year. In fact, doing everything the reverse was really refreshing. And I'm really pleased I did a southbound attempt this year. I tell you what, Heather, what I really didn't look forward to was Pennsylvania. Those rocks, there's just something about those rocks. And it did. I got there and I felt like I was being persecuted by the rocks. Yeah. It's just like, you guys have got to, what is it? What did I do? Yeah, me and the rocks have a bad relationship.
I think most people share that sentiment.
Yeah, yeah. I got to say, they were kind to me every time I fell. I just always seemed to avoid the rocks. So, they gave me that.
So one final question I'd like to wrap up with was, what was your highest high, your best moment? And then also, what was your lowest low, your absolute worst moment?
It's really funny. You could almost say, without a question, the highs were the people, my crew, the other runners who joined me, and the relationships and the shared experience with other people. So that for me was the highest high. There's a saying in Japanese, which I was listening to. I tell you what, it was really entertaining for me while I was on there was the technology of the ability to be able to listen to podcasts. Eventually I got Joe Rogan out. Sorry, Joe, but like it was, I just got to a point where I was like, no more Joe, And I found actually Anthony Bourdain's entire food travel series on a podcast. So I just listened to Anthony Bourdain every single episode. And when he went to Japan, there's this saying, and it means to share a joyous moment with another human being. Which is a moment in time which will be never repeated. So if, I don't know what that phrase is, I'm sorry. But the people with the highs. I think the lows, probably Vermont was just, I felt traumatized. I started to twitch, and my face was twitching a little bit. I had a weird tick going on. I think just running through mud for like 3 days or whatever it was, and finally coming out of the long trail. I mean, that is one ancient prehistoric style kind of trail. And then it was tough. And I think just the mud, I'd never really embraced it and never really enjoyed it. Whereas eventually I did start to make friends with the Rocks in Pennsylvania, but no, I just admired, I didn't find I embraced it. I embraced my mindset to get through it, but yeah, I just, there was so much mud because there was a lot of rain this year. So that was tough.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very difficult year in New England with the rain and especially Vermont. I mean, Vermont is known as Vermud for a reason, and that's in a normal year. So I can only imagine what you were experiencing up there.
Yeah. I felt like a prisoner of war who'd escaped, and I was just going through the trenches and just started to physically, it wasn't really so bad. I say that it wasn't so bad, but yeah, it gave me that overuse injury. So yeah, that was
right.
My least favorite part of the trial. But hey, you know, that's part of the experience, and that's part of, yeah. You know, it's not always a really nice, easy time out there. And that's the satisfying thing. It's like, you know what? I got through that. So that I feel pretty proud about that.
Did you ever lose a shoe in the mud?
Yeah, you know, I tied them pretty tight.
Okay.
Yeah.
I learned my lesson very early in Vermont on my first hike when I lost a shoe, and I had to like take it out of the mud.
Was it stuck and you had to really, and you were standing in the mud in your sock?
I was just walking, and as I lifted a foot, the shoe didn't come with it. And then just, you know, I had to reach down in the mud and dig around and pull my shoe out.
That's not fun. I mean, it's happened to me as a child, but yeah, right. On the FKT.
Yeah, luckily not on my FKT. That was my very first AT hike.
Oh, right.
And I learned not to trust Vermont mud.
It'll keep your shoes.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing. It's been really great talking to you and hearing your stories.
Yeah, well, thanks, Heather. And yeah, actually, what I didn't mention was I did like the Donald Duck dance, and I did the Looney Tunes dance. So if anyone wants to go and check those dances out, it's kind of what kept me sane sometimes out there. Check out my Instagram page, which is my name and then Ultra. So Christian spelled with a K, Christian Ultra. And it's yeah, it's pretty entertaining.
Thanks again, Christian, for coming on the show. You can read about his FKTs on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow his adventures on Instagram at Christian Ultra. I also want to give a special thank you to John G for supporting the FKT podcast. John G makes trail running essentials designed to go further, perfect for your next FKT. Shop now at johng.com with code FKT for 10% off.